One thing is certain in Napa Valley. Wine and family go hand in hand. Something like Beauchene Vineyards and Cabernet Sauvignon. Beauchene is a small family-owned vineyard and winery located in St. Helena on Silverado Trail. Doug Beauchene is part of the trio of farmers slash craftsmen making the wine. We visited Doug on a foggy and unusually rainy day in May of 2010, where we toured the cave and then settled down for a tasting. Well, we're in St. Helena, and we're here with Doug Beauchene of Beauchene Vineyards. Doug, how are you today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Good. Okay, Doug has a little bit of a cold, so I'll go ahead and say that now.
Sounds good, thanks.
People can understand that. First thing I want to ask you, Doug, is about your distribution, if there is any. And you told me that you do 400 cases a year.
Yeah, that's right. And in terms of distribution, we sell 95% plus through our wine club and to visitors who come here to the winery. We do have one small distributor in Ohio, of all places. And the rest of the distribution is done by my brother-in-law and myself, and we self-distribute to a handful of restaurants and wine shops, mostly within 20 minutes of here.
I'm going to sidetrack for a minute and talk about this ridiculous law that's out there regarding shipping between the states. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that they make it pretty difficult on all wineries, but it's especially difficult for smaller wineries who rely on direct shipping to consumers in different states. So we're hopeful that over time those laws will begin to change, and they are in some states, but most people would tell you the progress has been too slow.
Well, I should restate my question, too. It was actually a bill I was referring to. Do you think there's any chance of this bill passing at all?
What we found the last time around was when there was a change made at the federal level, states quickly found ways to get around it. So for the states to give up their historical power in that space seems pretty unlikely. But, you know, I think over time, the market will continue to open up. It's just a matter of how long it takes.
Well, especially with the growth of all the small wineries, there's been so many of them that have popped up, you would think that it would be almost overpowering.
You would think.
Give me a what if you would. If this crazy, ridiculous bill did happen, if it did pass, where does it put somebody like you guys?
That what if seems too unlikely for us to concern ourselves right now. For the bill to pass in its original form doesn't seem likely to me. If it did pass, we would have to really seriously think about whether we could continue doing what we do.
Which is an inconceivable thought, I'm sure.
Yeah, that would be a big disappointment, to say the least.
Let's talk about Beauchene. Give me a little bit of your history, if you would, how you started. And as I understand, your dad started the whole winery here.
We started as a partnership between my father and myself and my brother-in-law, Sean. And we began on the grape growing side, actually, in 1999. We have a small estate vineyard here, so we've been selling the grapes since then to other wineries here in the valley. And there was repeated and high-level interest in the grapes every year. And so it took us a while, but we finally clued in that maybe we had something that we could do with our own fruit. And so we built the facility. We finished this underground winery in 2006, just in time to crush our first vintage. So that first vintage sold out right away, and we just released the second vintage 4 weeks ago. So we're very much in the early stages of things.
Very nice. We took a tour of the cave, and you called it horseshoe shape, but it does actually connect in a odd sort of, about how many square footage are we looking at?
Yeah, the whole cave is about 6,000 square feet, which is you know, very small for a winery, but it's enough space for what we do. We do 100% of our winemaking, both from the estate vineyard and here inside the winery. And Sean and I do 100% of that wine work. So it's just the two of us, and, you know, we've got enough space to bounce off the walls together.
I assume it's got to be a pretty good family cooperation there, right? Between brother and brother-in-law?
Yeah, it is, and it has to be. I mean, you know, during harvest and during fermentation especially, we're here 18, 20 hours of the day, and you get tired, but working with just family helps. You know, it's we have a real, real close control in terms of what goes on, and we think that makes a big difference with the wine.
Do you employ any people full-time otherwise?
No, we don't. Sean and I try to do as much of the vineyard work as we can, so we were out there working this morning. but I will bring in crews 5 or 6 times a year to do the big projects that we can't do ourselves.
And how many acres is the estate itself?
The estate is 18 acres, but the vineyard is just over 6 planted.
But you're still dealing with 6 acres, just the two of you.
Well,
generally,
as much as we can, but I'm not shy about saying that we can't do it all. So, you know, we get help when we need it. Yeah. In fact, they're out there this morning.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of work going on in the valley this morning.
Yeah.
Good day to be working.
Yeah, right.
You're originally from Seattle, you told me.
That's right. I grew up outside of Seattle in a small, what used to be a hick coal mining town, and now is the 4th highest property values in the state. It's basically a bedroom community of Seattle.
So what brought you to California?
I came down to California to go to college, and I lived overseas a couple of different times, but other than that, have been in the Bay Area since then.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to school at Stanford.
Oh, okay. And just where'd you live when you were living overseas?
Well, let's see. I studied and lived overseas in Berlin, Germany, and Krakow, Poland. And then I went back to live in Eastern Europe again with my wife. We lived in Warsaw, Poland, and Bucharest, Romania. And then I went back again to work in the wine industry, and I lived in Bordeaux for a season.
Well, what a rough life you've had. It's too bad you didn't live here to wear cool.
Yeah, the travel's been really fun. It's been a good part of my past.
Wow, what a great history.
Yeah, thanks. It's been fun.
Yeah. So were your studies in wine all along, or?
No. Wine is really a second career for me. I went back to UC Davis and got my degree in viticulture and enology there. But the first time around, the studies were in international relations. So,
okay.
Something that's not so useful for winemaking.
No, I don't imagine. Well, maybe when you're traveling a bit.
A bit, yeah.
So when you were in Bordeaux, though, just to be specific, was it regarding what you were planning on doing at the time, or was it geared towards wine?
That was focused on wine. So I spent some time in Toulouse studying French and French winemaking, and then I spent a season at a chateau in Bordeaux working in the cellar.
That had to be absolutely amazing.
It was. It was wonderful. It was great experience for a couple of reasons. I worked for the chateau where I worked. I worked for the 14th generation. So that sense of history and belonging and ownership of the place is unique, certainly from our American perspective. And then the other thing that was interesting is I had 3-day weekends. And so my wife and my youngest son at the time and I would jump in the car and visit a different wine growing region every weekend. And that was at least as interesting as actually working in Bordeaux.
So. Now, just to be clear on this is just before you began this effort?
This was before we had built the facility here at Beauchene Vineyards.
But it was after 99?
It was after 99, that's right.
How did they look on you as being an American there? I know it's common. I see a lot of internships and that kind of thing going back and forth.
Right.
But how was it for you? I mean, how were you treated? How were you looked at?
Yeah, that's a great question. Overall, we were treated very well. The family that we worked for, they rely pretty heavily on outside labor, both in terms of their French labor force and in terms of contributors from overseas. So they were interested in seeing what I brought to the table. And I'm sure I learned far more than what I taught, but they had the right perspective on that. So it was, for me, it was great. And they didn't speak any English. And my French right now stinks, but at the time I could get along. So that was a great way to learn French.
Yeah. Getting thrown into the deep end, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was French or nothing.
You have to have a great deal of affection when you own a facility that's doing 400 cases. You must have tremendous affection for looking back at that time in Bordeaux.
Well, I really do, for a couple of reasons. First of all, from the family perspective. I mean, their tradition and heritage over 14 generations, obviously we can't match, but it does give you a sense of some window into our future down the road. What could Beauchene Vineyards look like to my kids or their grandkids? It's tough to get that sense of history unless you spend some time in a place like that. And then the other piece that was important for me is we always knew with Beauchene Vineyards, we wanted to make the wine and manage the estate and have our overall approach to the business be in more of an old world style. So for me to have that firsthand perspective at the home of it all made a lot of sense. And we try to carry some of that over into what we do at Beauchene Vineyards.
Well, that kind of steps right into my next question. How old is your son?
My son now is 8 years old.
Okay, well, he's a little early yet to get into the business.
He's a little, very much so, yeah.
Is it your hope that he might consider carrying that on?
You know, we have two young boys. The younger one's 5. And if they...
Oh, well, he'd be ready to go.
Yeah, sure.
Not
he's
the 8-year-old.
He's lined up, yeah. No, they... if they decide they want to do that, that'd be great. Right now, they love... riding the tractor and the forklift and the ATV, and as far as they're concerned, that's what running a winery is all about.
But they're exposed to it on a daily basis then. You expose them, you let them, they're part of this here.
Yeah, sure. You know, no, I wouldn't say on a daily basis, but they hear about it every day. They will come over here from time to time. The youngest one came and helped me do a little bit of suckering in the vineyard a couple days ago because the suckers that needed to be taken off were down at ankle level for me, and that was just right for him. They come and help sort through the fruit during harvest, but you know, they last for a half an hour at a time, so.
And what kid wouldn't give his left leg to be able to have a cave to go play hide and seek in?
Well, they do like the cave, they like the vineyard, but they think that everybody has this. You know.
Don't they?
Yes, yes, for them, everyone grows up in Napa Valley and has a vineyard, and you know, they don't know any different.
I'm going to go back to what you're talking about, suckers. I've never heard that before. What is that?
Yeah, so broadly speaking, a sucker is any green growth on a vine where you don't want it.
So something basically leaching off of the life of the plant.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, you prune the plant early in the season to try to control the growth, but even then the vine has its own mind about where it's going to send out shoots. And if you don't take off those shoots, then they do sap the resources of the vine, and they can also, if they continue to grow, provide shade where you don't want it. So they're, you know, this is the time of year that we... the first time of the year that we get rid of those extra shoots.
Is your wife involved in the business at all, or?
No, the three women, my wife and my sister and my mother, they're the smart ones. They stay out of it, and that seems to work just fine for everybody.
Makes for better dinner time conversation, I bet.
Yeah, it's a little healthier that way, I think.
You're a Cabernet winery, obviously, and the special wine is Carrera, am I getting it right?
Yeah, yeah, thanks for asking. So we actually make 4 wines. We make 2 red wines. The first is the Cabernet, and the second is our Bordeaux blend. We call that Carrera. We make a Sauvignon Blanc, which we only sell to our wine club members, and then only one bottle at a time. We make a very small amount of it, and it sells out right away. And then we make a rosé as well. You know, in terms of anything else, I would say the guests who come here to the winery find it a very intimate and wonderful experience, if I could speak for them. The winery itself is unique. The wine sells itself, but a lot of people come and appreciate the estate. It has a very interesting history that goes back to the 1800s. The rose gardens have been redesigned to reflect a typical garden from the 1800s, and they're amazing, especially this time of year. My father has a small car collection to go along with the Carrera wine. That's the inspiration for the Carrera wine. So there are a lot of things that we do on a very, very one-on-one intimate basis. Sean and I are the only people who give the tours, and we open it up only on a limited basis. But the people who do come, we always enjoy being with them.
Okay, let me see. Husband, dad, winemaker, owner, tour guide. You must sit around and watch TV quite often, I'm sure, right?
Wow.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, when you have 2 little kids, no matter what you do, the 2 little kids is 90% of it.
Well, you touched on something I wasn't aware of, and that is the history of the property.
Yeah. According to local lore, the property was originally developed by Leland Stanford of the university and the governorship, and supposedly he developed it for his mistress. So the original deed, the name on that deed, is one of his business associates. And allegedly that's, you know, how you did it in those days if you were developing something for your mistress. But that, since then, it's been very interesting also. Leland sold the property to a Russian princess. She made all kinds of wonderful renovations on the property. It's also been used as a camellia nursery. The property has been a walnut farm. It's been a Christmas tree farm. And the oldest records we have of vines are only about 35 years old. So they may have been here before that, but we just don't know for sure. So
that's pretty colorful.
It is. It's a fun property, and the original estate buildings are wonderful. They're amazing. So
that's great. You must have been thrilled when you got a hold of this place.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, the Stanford tie was probably the straw that broke the camel's back, because all 4 of us, my family, went to Stanford. So that clinched the deal.
Let me get to my question I was going to go to before, and it's one I ask every winemaker, every owner. Do you have any opinions on corks versus caps?
Yeah, sure. I mean, for us, it's always made sense to stick with cork, sticking with that old world approach. But I have no problems at all with using any kind of enclosure, and I think the screw caps make a lot of sense for certain wines and certain times. And in fact, if we didn't have the old world approach that we did, I would probably use screw caps on our Sauvignon Blanc and our Rosé. So I think good time for both.
Anything else you want to talk about specifically just before I wrap it up? Anything you want to bring up?
For us, I think we appeal mostly to people who are looking for something that's pretty hard to find. And I think as opposed to some wineries that talk about the family nature of their business, we are 100% family owned and operated. If you come here, you will only see Sean and I doing the work. And if that appeals to you, then those are the type of people we like to meet and tell our story to. So for us, that's one of the most gratifying parts about the business is talking to people who want to know about the family and why we're here doing it.
I think that's very appealing to our listeners. It certainly is appealing to me. And when you read you're in the Napa Valley Vintners Association, obviously.
We are, yeah.
And majority of the members are families. You don't see the corporate thing big there, which I think is really impressive. And I give them a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
Will you be at Auction Napa Valley this year at all? Or?
Yeah, we will be there. We are part of a couple different lots involved in the auction, and this is the first time we'll be involved in that as well. So
great.
Be fun to see.
Will you be at the barrel auction too?
My brother-in-law will be there. I won't be there. Yeah. We tag team a lot, so.
That's right. You said you weren't going to be here. You're going to be out of town.
Yeah, I'm out of town that weekend, right.
And that's Sean.
Sean is my brother-in-law. That's okay. Right.
Well, we'll be there, so I'm going to stop up and say hi.
Ah, great. Yeah, you bet.
So if folks who listen to this interview go, hey, you know, I want to learn a little bit more about Doug and Sean and the family and perhaps even buy some of their wine, where can they learn about you?
Well, the website's always the best place. We're at www.boshenvineyards.com. And other than that, you can't really learn anything about us unless you come here. So.
And it's by appointment, I assume, correct?
It is, yeah. In fact, you need to call or email me. And that's how we do it. So, you know, the phone number, you can call through. It's 707-963-3674. Otherwise, you can send an email through the website and reach me that way.
That's terrific. Doug, thanks a million for the tour and the fabulous wine. You have a beautiful facility here.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks for coming. It was a great pleasure.